The Podcast Under the Stairs, bonus episode number 12. An excerpt from Clive Barker's Aberat. Oh woe is me, oh woe is me. I used to have a hamster tree, but it was eaten by a newt, and now I have no cuddly fruit. Oh woe is me, oh woe is me. I used to have a hamster tree.
You're listening to Druid FM on 192 BC.
Welcome to the podcast Under the Stairs. Hi everyone, and welcome to the podcast Under the Stairs, bonus episode number 12. I'm your host Duncan McLeish, and welcome to the show. This show has been a couple of months in the making, actually. It features an interview conducted with myself and Graham Humphrey, the horror artist, which was recorded back on Friday the 13th in February. It has taken me a bit of time to catch up with most of my recordings, and I had a small gap this week, which finally allowed me the time to piece together the audio and put it out on this special bonus episode. It's a great interview. Like all interviews with Graham, you know, are, they kind of start off in one direction, you never really know where they're going to go. So we cover a lot of discussions on Giallo, Arrow, Death Waltz. We cover quite a grand base of things. It's quite good that I'm actually dropping the interview just now, because a week ago they finally announced details of his upcoming book, so I will be posting them in the show notes, and at the end of the show I'll be telling you how you can pre-order yourself a copy of that book. So I hope you guys are doing well out there. I want to once again thank you for checking out this show, showing your support, and special thanks to David Bates, listener of the show, who has been posting some really fucking cool topics and discussion threads in the Podcast Under the Stairs Facebook page, and you guys have all been getting involved with that. They've been a lot of fun. If you are a listener who has not joined the Facebook page yet, then there is always time. If you go over to Facebook, if you have a Facebook that is, and type in the top search bar Podcast Under the Stairs, come across our closed group, join in the madness over there. Thanks very much, Dave, for posting so much stuff for us to comment on. There's some announcements that I can make now, which are concerning upcoming shows. So all you guys out there will probably know by now that episode number 58 is upon us. It is recorded this week with myself, Jeffrey X Martin from Kiss the Goat podcast, 6.5 Feet Under podcast, Cinema Beef, and the Not So Evil Episodes podcast. And also, his compadre on the Not So Evil Episodes podcast, Mr. Doug Tilley, who also does No Budget Nightmares. All three of us are going to sit down and discuss Fulci's Gates of Hell trilogy, which I am so excited about. I can't wait for that. And I can also announce that on that show, we will be giving away, we'll be announcing a special giveaway for that show, which is the Arrow Steelbook edition of The Beyond. So I will probably have the Baz on that show to do what he does best, gear things up for that competition. Also, if that wasn't enough, the lovely people over at Arrow have gifted me another prize, which will be coming up on a show probably in the middle of April. It's a fucking great prize, so I hope you guys are really excited and you get involved with trying to win that copy of that Blu-ray. Upcoming shows also include a live commentary. Well, when I say live commentary, it'll be pre-recorded, but you know what I mean. Between myself, The Baz, and Dave from Rock and Reel Reviews, I'm going to introduce those guys to Rawhead Rex. They've never seen Rawhead Rex before. You can only imagine what Baz is going to say about Rawhead Rex, but that'll be dropping sometime, probably Easter Monday, I think. That'll be your special episode dropping then. So just before episode number 50, you will have the Rawhead Rex commentary, which is going to be fucking mental. So like I say, plenty of things coming up for you guys to take part in, potentially win, and if you've never seen Rawhead Rex before, oh my god, are you in for a treat. That movie is fucking bananas. So yeah, tons of stuff coming up. So this will be a slightly shorter episode because the main feature is an interview. Like I say, it's a pretty fucking awesome interview, so I hope you enjoy the interview that I conducted with the horror artist Graham Humphreys, the man who will be designing the podcast Under the Stairs poster, which will be available probably sometime in the next 2 months, hopefully. It's a great conversation. Graham's doing a fucking shitload of awesome work just now. Chances are you may have a product which has artwork of his somewhere on your shelf. If you're me, you've got it on your walls and on your shelf. But yeah, so that interview is coming up right after this.
My name is X.
And I'm Cootie.
Please consider us your high priest
and priestess
of satanic cinema.
Join us on our podcast, Kiss the Goat, which will drag your soul through some of the finest
and worst
devil movies of the last 50 years.
Devils and demons, exorcisms and possessions,
cults and rituals, dogs and cats living together.
Is that a devil movie?
Maybe. Sort of.
I don't know, babe.
We'll talk about it later. Join us on the Horrorphilia Podcast Network every other week as we don our hoods and cloaks and
kiss
the goat.
It's a hell of a good time.
I knew you were going to say that.
Of course you did. It's in the script.
Do you like movie reviews that are insightful, thought-provoking, and delivered by somebody who's trained to critically dissect every aspect of a motion picture without ever having to use obscenities?
Then you've got the wrong show. Kruger Nation Horror Podcast is ready to feed your slasher movie and exploitation needs. There'll be more blood, expletives, and titties than you can shake your grandma's beetle flaps at. Visit www.krugernation.com.
And welcome back. So it is my pleasure at this time to be introducing a former guest of this show. This man is an incredibly busy man, so I am honoured that he's been managed to squeeze me in to some of his free time. You have seen his work on Arrow Blu-rays and DVD covers. You will have seen it if you grew up in the time period that was known as the 80s and 90s, he went to video stores. You've seen it there. His stuff is now on vinyl. He's an incredibly busy man, and I am so thankful to have him back on the show. It's Mr. Graham Humphreys. How are you doing, sir?
I'm very well, thank you.
When you were last on, we spoke about the kind of move away from kind of the art that associated with the film, you know, the crazy VHS covers, the kind of quirky things, the kind of posters that you saw in video stores, and I kind of move away from that to just, like, oh, here we go, here is a photoshopped image, bang, like that. This is a still from the movie, bang. This is Quarantine, the Rec remake, where we put the ending on the front cover. You know, like, these sort of things, which are completely different, but it seems like, you'll know better than me, it seems like there is, like, a slow movement, kind of. I mean, like, companies like Mondo, obviously yourself, Arrow, Scream Factory, these companies that are kind of going out their way to say, well, if we're bringing these movies back, we kind of have to capture the whole spirit of the movie by kind of getting these artists to do work which isn't the original front cover but feels in the spirit of that kind of 90s, 80s, 1970s. Is it more prevalent to you now? Or is it still kind of, are you still seeing that it's a kind of uphill struggle to kind of to see more of that come through? I mean, because obviously horror being quite self-contained, we're our own little bubble, that a lot of what we read is just from horror sites and it's from horror blogs and all the rest, and maybe they are just reporting on that stuff, maybe not giving us two sides of the coin.
Yeah, I think that probably it's to do with the fact that, you know, all these films which are being sort of endlessly regurgitated and, you know, re-released, if somebody buys the property and it's just easy just to bug on a previous campaign, because, you know, quite often, certainly used to be the case that if you bought a film to release on you know, video, it certainly used to happen, presumably it happened with DVD as well, that you'd end up with a sort of package of materials, publicity materials, which you'd then use to help promote the product, which would be, you know, key art, which had always come with a film. And that key art would be, you know, a probably familiar campaign, which people knew anyway, though there might be several pieces which, you know, they could then pick and choose. But, you know, you release a film so many times, that artwork is just, you know, being trundled out again and again and again. And I think the whole point was that actually to try and make a bit of a difference, that actually commissioning new artwork, in a, you know, which people hadn't been doing for such a long time, especially for, you know, an older film, commissioning new artwork to give it a new, fresher identity. As you say, in the spirit of the film itself and the era it was created in, it's you know, it's just another tool for really reselling the film, I guess, in a way. But it's also, hopefully, there's a little bit of a reverence in it. And I certainly know with Arrow, from my conversations with Francesco there, that you know, his whole thing was to actually, you know, bring back the sort of the love that went into the marketing, and I'm calling it love. It probably wasn't love at all. It's, you know, just desperation, probably. But you know, nevertheless, you know, you'd employ an artist to, you know, generate this stuff, and you know, as we're talking about soundtracks as well, you know, sometimes the artwork might actually supersede the film, and people remember the artwork, they may not remember the film. In the same way with a great Morricone soundtrack, for instance, you're going to remember the soundtrack. You probably don't remember what film it came from, maybe.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess there's that, and you know, because the whole issue about downloads, is that, you know, going to be the way forward? Well, it obviously is, but how what's the longevity with DVD and Blu-ray? Well, Arrow aren't really doing DVDs anymore, even, so they've decided that actually their only market is Blu-ray now, because again, they recognise that the people that are going to be buying the films are people who just love their films and they want to see the best possible presentation. So, you know, Blood and Black Lace, for instance, you know it's gone through a lengthy restoration process. You know, the sound's been, you know, brought back to be as perfect as possible. The picture quality is great. They've got rid of all the scratches and all the nonsense that might have been there. So they've got, you know, obviously the best quality source material, and then they've obviously gone through the whole process of creating new extras as well. So the whole thing is it's aimed at a collector's market rather than, you know, your mass market. It's not going to be a mass market film. It's going to be for people who just love their films. So the whole packaging and presentation part of it is really about creating the best quality product or version of that product for your shelf, you know, for the collector's shelf. It's, you know, obviously for people who are just like, you know, like a library of great films, and rather than just, you know, trash that you just pick up and, you know, you kind of never play again. So it's stuff that, you know, is intended to be there. It's almost, you know, for people who like to have an archive of film.
I can't wait. And then but I've already pre-ordered Blood and Black Lace, because that was one of those ones that when they announced it was coming out, I was like, finally, because I've recently, like the last maybe 5 or 6 years, really become quite obsessed with like the giallo movies and Italian cinema in general, actually, especially like kind of late 60s, early 70s, Bava, Argento, Fulci, you know, these sort of things. And I can trace it right back to Arrow really kind of putting that stuff out and bringing it to my attention. A lot of titles that I had heard of but never seen, and I really got into that one. But Blood and Black Lace is like, you know, it's the beginning of giallo, and it's one of these movies that I'm like, you know, slightly obsessed about, and it's one of those ones that I'm always like, why is it not on Blu-ray? When I can walk into like an HMV, for example, and I can see like the cheaply most horrible movies, you know, on the racks, you know, on Blu-ray, and go, how can they have that on Blu-ray and Blood and Black Lace can't be on Blu-ray? There is no justice in the world. And yeah, I was really excited about that, and then double excited when I was reading through the press blurb, and your name was attached to that work. I was like, yes, match made in heaven, because I love your Argento, the stuff that you've done for Argento, releases for Arrow, I love. I think you kind of capture specific points. I'm just like, yeah, that pretty much sums up the movie. So.
Well, funnily enough, Blood and Black Lace is another film I hadn't actually seen until Arrow came up with the project. I mean, I knew of the film, I'd seen stills from it, but I'd actually never seen it at all. Though, and you know, I kind of just saw and thought, well, how come I've actually not seen this film? Because obviously, it is the as you say, the beginning of the whole, the real sort of giallo stuff that we love to know. I mean, certainly you can see, you know, Argento is written all over it. Though,
oh, good.
So, you know, it's just, and even just the colors, the lighting, all this like amazing stuff, and you know, this sort of kind of stylized violence as well, though. As well, it's, and you know, the set piece killings, you know, it's such,
yeah,
sort of playing around with the sexual identity as well, though, which is also another Argento thing. Mm-hmm. Even, you know, very obviously, is it Deep Red, which has the you know, the obviously the sort of the hat, that actually the costume's virtually the same, and of course it,
okay, yeah, pretty much, yeah,
a woman as well, and you're imagining it's actually a guy, so yeah, all of that's in there as well, though. So yeah, it's obviously his big homage, but or is he ripping off? I don't know, homage or rip off, we don't know.
I don't know. I remember I read a story somewhere that Argento became so obsessed with Bay of Blood that he had a friend steal one of the prints from a cinema, like a cinema in his city. They stole, but it was the only print the cinema had, so they had to actually show a different movie for the remaining like month or so. And Argento apparently still has the print. So I just find that, like, because sometimes, like, especially because, like, Argento's considered, you know, he's considered a master of horror, and it's really weird to think that these guys, very much like, even like kind of more modern sort of filmmakers as well, obviously they have their idols as well, they look up to, and you know, there's a bit of hero worship there as well, and it's funny because, like, we sometimes do think these guys are, you know, look at them, they're master artists, you're masters of their craft, and then you remember, well, no, they're just people as well. You know, they've all started somewhere.
As fans, yeah, of course, yeah. We were talking about Donglers the other day, and somebody brought up the point that with streaming films, that, you know, you obviously have your libraries, you go to whichever, you know, Netflix or nothing, whatever the company may be. But it is true that sometimes they'll have titles, but those titles will not be on their list always, you know, where they have a time period in which they have access to that film, then it's no longer on their list. And actually, so films can actually just completely disappear. And, you know, if you think that, well, it's not on Blu-ray, it's not on DVD, and it's only downloadable, then suddenly it's not downloadable. Where has it gone? You know, how do you access that film? So I think there's still, you know, there's still a market for Blu-ray, DVD, and you know, that's going to be with us for a little while longer. The download thing, I don't know how that's going to pan out, because, you know, we're talking about this whole physical, you know, tactile thing about having an actual package, a cover, yeah. You know, if it comes with extra stuff like a booklet or all the other stuff, you know, peripheral stuff. I think, as far as I understand, if you're downloading a film, streaming a film, you're not getting the extras anyway. You're just getting the film, and that's it.
Yeah, you're just getting the movie, and that's it.
So that's really what the whole, you know, new packaging thing is all about. But certainly, in terms of you know, film soundtrack release and the stuff that, you know, Death Walks have been doing, that obviously now they're doing this with in conjunction with other people. But actually having a physical album, you know, vinyl album, which has, you know, has size and weight, mm-hmm. and everything else, and then commissioning new artwork for otherwise familiar films, again, it's creating a new sort of collector's market, mm-hmm. of real physical stuff that, you know, people can look and appreciate, and you know, show your mates.
Yeah. I mean, because you've been doing stuff with, I mean, you were doing, now let me get this right, when we spoke last, was it the Beyond? Were you doing the Beyond for them?
Right, yes, that's not been issued yet. Mm-hmm. I don't know when they're, or if they are going to, I presume they will release it. It certainly has the rights to. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know when they release that, but certainly it's been done.
But you've been doing stuff with them as well. So it's like in some ways it's really cool, because you're getting to, you're obviously getting to apply your craft over many different mediums, which, I mean, you've always been doing anyway. To be fair, I mean, you're not. I mean, sometimes I forget that you know, you've been involved with the music industry in the past for doing,
yes,
stuff there, and you know, doing that sort of stuff anyway. I mean, how much fun is that? You know, like where you're maybe not necessarily. Right, let me get this right. In terms of doing that, how do you approach that differently? Is it a case that listening to the soundtrack shapes how you would design something, as opposed to, you're obviously still incorporating the visual element from the movie, but do you find yourself listening to a soundtrack and saying, you know, no, that this art needs to be more aggressive because the soundtrack's more aggressive? I mean, do you feel that way, or is it?
Well, with the stuff I've done with Death Waltz, I've not actually had access to the soundtrack as such beforehand. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, obviously, I've largely have seen the films anyway, though. I'm not really working with that music in mind. Right. I'm probably still working with the visual, the filmic stuff. So my approach is from the viewer's point of view rather than the person who's listening to the music. And it's about playing with the imagery, because really, I guess, because it's a painting, you're still playing with the visuals, and you know, you're trying to create the texture of the film. As opposed to, you know, there isn't a medium for the sound within a painting, if you understand what I'm saying.
So, yeah, I do.
Still, we're still working with a sort of the loose idea of a film poster, I guess. I guess the remit with Death Waltz is that, you know, commissioning artists, you can basically have free reign to do whatever they like, which can be an artist's interpretation, which can be just completely abstract. I mean, I don't remember the one they did for The Shining, which was literally almost like, you know, like a few pixels, basically. But obviously that was somebody's concept to just, you know, hone in on a sort of little iconic kind of little thing, some of the, you know, the pattern in a carpet, and just use that, and which in many ways is sufficient, I guess, because the sounds... soundtrack in a film is quite an abstract thing in terms of your vinyl cover anyway. I mean, everybody knows the campaigns that have been produced, and you know, obviously if they come to me, I would have obviously looked at doing something far more literal, but it's great to see that there is that kind of variety of stuff out there, though, that you know, what I do is what I do, but then other people do something different, so
yeah,
good that there you do see. I mean, Arrow do the same thing with their covers, that there is a quite a big variety of styles on those covers. Mm-hmm. So you know, everybody has their own way of interpreting, you know, the material, and I do what they do. Yeah, so on the whole film thing, I went to see Ennio Morricone at the O2 last week.
Really?
I've been lucky to see him twice before, but no, this was a particularly fantastic show. Also, we think that a 81-year-old man obviously had some heart issues and stuff. So, you know, this will probably be the last time he's going to be performing live in his country. Well, on this current tour, if that's maybe the last time he'll be performing or conducting, you know. So we don't know. But what a fantastic set. And it was quite interesting they did make a point in the program that all the arrangements were the original arrangements for the original scores. So what you actually heard being played was exactly what was performed for those scores. So you had, you know, everything from, you know, the spaghetti western stuff through to you know, Once Upon a Time in America, Cinema Paradiso. I mean, just this amazing kind of range of music, and The Mission, of course. So a whole suite of stuff from that, but yeah, just absolutely stunning, and you know, you could tell people weeping with joy.
There's something really powerful, like revisiting a lot once again, like the Giallo stuff, and listening to how his, because a lot of people nowadays like associate like Argento with Goblin, and I mean that's just because, you know, that's, you know, that is like a marriage made in heaven. But when you go back and check out things like Bird with a Crystal Plumage, and you hear the score for that, is absolutely phenomenal. I mean, it's
Velvet, of course, as well.
Yeah, there's so many highs and lows in terms of the dramatics, because I mean, I love Goblin. I've seen Goblin before, but I sometimes think that Goblin's very much full kind of in your face straight away and all the rest, and there isn't always the kind of range of subtleties in the music. And then you listen to Marconi's stuff, and when you listen to that, you get everything in it. It covers the full spectrum of kind of emotions in one track, and you're just like, and it's obviously, there's a lot of, you can hear it coming straight from the spaghetti western stuff, but the fact he just adapts it, just incredible, absolutely incredible. And you don't get that. I think that's the thing, without trying to sound old before my time, it's just something that, there's the occasional horror film. I mean, there's been a kind of a push for it recently with like movies like that The Guest, for example, is a modern one, which, yeah, you know, it really tried to kind of capture the essence of a soundtrack in the movie, but you don't get it now. I mean, the late 90s and the 2000s, basically, if it was a horror movie that was coming out, it was a mixtape of metal bands who were popular at the time on a CD, and that's your soundtrack for the Scream album. Oh, thanks very much. And you know, there was kind of almost like no one was sitting there saying, well, does this music actually go with the movie? You know, does it kind of capture the peaks and the troughs of what's happening with her character? It's really strange, because to me, like, the score is just as important as the visual. And in fact, sometimes even more important. Suspiria, as much as the visual aspect is phenomenal, a lot of the times when nothing's happening, the most unsettling part of that movie is the score. It's because it's crazy, and you're looking at the screen going, "What? She's just walking through an airport. Why do I feel like why is Goblin so intense right now? She's just walking in an airport." And it kind of throws you off, and it's really quite strange. We're recording this just now on Friday the 13th, so I mean, which is just like, is our day. I would be remiss if I didn't ask you, do you have a favourite Friday the 13th movie? And if so, what one is it?
I can't say that. I don't think I've seen all of them, to be quite honest.
Well, if you've seen one, you've potentially seen them all.
Because I went to the Weekend of Horrors in Germany. I know that Kane Hodder was one of the guests there, and it was suggested by the organisers. I did a piece just specifically for the festival, which, you know, it was a representation of Kane Hodder and his Jason incarnation. So I think that was it three or four films he did? Was it just the three, maybe?
I think he did four.
Okay, well, I bought each of those four, if mm-hmm. it's four, and I watched them through. For me, what I wanted to do was, because, you know, he's not really there as Kane Hodder, you know, he's basically in his mask anyway, so he's just a big bloke in a film, basically, but with limited acting, you know, some possibilities. So for me, it was all about whatever the Jason face beneath the mask was going to be like, and, you know, there was one particular film which I thought, actually, this looks fantastic, the others just look a bit dodgy, so that's really... And actually, I did quite enjoy the film. I thought it kind of did quite well, so that must have been... probably one of the last ones, I guess.
Yeah.
Certainly, you could sense that there was a little bit of a budget going on there.
I think that's the strange thing about those movies, is that they became so popular that you can see a marked difference in between movies for special effects, for kind of pyrotechnics. There's more blood, there's more splatter. it's obviously, you know, they've had to tackle it in a completely different way from the original, where it is basically... It's a modified Giallo. So basically, it's a whodunit in the first movie. And by the time we've established this is our Jason character, it's like all bets are off. It's time to start the killing. So it's been really weird, because obviously there's been talk of the last 2 years, 3 years now, of them rebooting that again after the remake, which I wasn't a fan of. And they're going down that direction again. And it's interesting to see how film companies, because obviously it's a marketable name, Jason's a, you know, he's a pop icon, just very much like Freddy is, how difficult it is for them to kind of... They can market everything else with them on it, but they just can't nail the films. I felt the same with the Nightmare remake, which I just felt was missing something. It wasn't completely soulless, but it felt, you know, fairly soulless. And then if you look at things like Texas Chainsaw Remake, and that kind of felt the same, where you're like, you've remade a movie which has next to no blood in it at all. It's all psychological terror, to the reversal, and we've got blood kind of oozing out the walls, and, you know, basements filled with blood, and there's utensils everywhere covered in blood. In fact, it's just like a big bloody mess. I mean, like, you watch as many horror films as I do, probably even more. I mean, when it comes to these sort of movies coming out, I mean, do you have, like, a nostalgia for stuff like that? You know, if you hear the remaking, you know, if tomorrow they decided they were remaking Tenebrae, would you be excited about that? Or would you be more excited about the... the new indie horror movie coming out from an up-and-coming director, which is going to try and do, for example, a kind of slasher movie, but in a different style.
Oh, I just think I'd rather see a new film with new ideas. I remember I think a whole bunch of people were quite incensed by the idea of Tim Burton remaking The Abominable Dr. Fibes. That did last year, and I don't know whether that was just rumour and got out of hand, or whether that was actually seriously talked about, I've no idea. I'd be heartbroken to think that was remade. It's just, without Vincent Price, it isn't, it's not fine.
It's not the same.
No, exactly. So, and you think, well, the film's so fantastic as they are, and you don't need to make a new version. I mean, what we're going to do is stick a lot of teenagers in there. That's all that will happen. And you think, well, no, it's not about that at all, though.
Yeah. It's strange that that seems to be the kind of go-to thing.
It's assumed that, well, this is the age group that goes to see the films, therefore they like to see people they can relate to in the films. sort of distressed, bored teenagers, I guess, though. Sort of chatting on a mobile phone or something. But, it's a bit of an odd one. I think it kind of misses the point, because when I went to see films, the last thing I wanted to do was see people like me in the films. I thought, well, I see the real people there. I want to see something different. I want to see something that's not my experience of the world. And that's, what I would go to the cinema for, and that's what I expect to see at the cinema, if it's not my experience. Otherwise, why would you be going?
Yeah, I mean, I have not seen it. It played Glasgow, and I wasn't in the area when it came out. And I could have hurt someone because I missed this movie. And then I saw you did Memory Serves. I think you did some kind of really funky artwork for it, for the editor.
Yeah, the editor. Yeah.
And can you tell me a bit about that movie? Because he tried to nail someone to tell me. Was it good? I mean, because certainly from the trailer, I was like, this is completely the sort of movie I want to see.
It's bonkers. It plays with the whole giallo thing. Obviously, it does reference, you can see blood and black lace in there, and all those sort of elements. But it's also really looking at the era in which the films were made as well, though. So, it's all about the sort of low tech solutions to stuff, and the sort of bad dubbing and dreadful subtitling, and it plays with all of that, and it's. It's hard for me because I love the guys and I love doing that campaign, and it's very odd doing a poster for a film you haven't seen, and then finally seeing it, and actually whilst the guys are actually there as well, though, which is very weird as well, and of course Laurence Harvey as well. So I could only work on the poster from what I presumed what was going to be the way the film was going to work. And, kind of largely, I think it kind of was like that. And, so I don't think I'm off track on that at all. But no, I loved it. I laughed a lot. I thought it was very, very funny. And if you know your giallo films, then you're going to love it, because it just references virtually every film we've ever seen of that ilk. And plus, it's got Udo Kier in it, for goodness sake. So,
oh, my God, yes.
So you have to love it for that alone.
And you can just see
they've actually poured their hearts into the film. They just know it's made by people who really, really love the genre stuff and just really want to make the best kind of homage to that genre they could possibly do. And even getting Claudio Simonetti to write the music as well, which is another big coup. So they've got as much as they could of the original essence in there. I think it works, though. I loved it. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, I can't wait. I know it's still doing the festival circuit, and then they'll obviously have to try and nail down some sort of distribution deal afterwards, whether it's going to end up in physical copies or on things like iTunes or that. I don't know, but I can't wait to see it. I mean, of the movies, I heard, the internet can be quite a bitchy place. I don't know if you know this, Graham. It can be quite a hostile place with people with opinions who will sit at the end of a year and say that 2014 was a bad year for horror. This is what I kept hearing. 2014 was a bad year for horror.
Anybody saying that?
Yeah, oh,
I think this might be for horror, actually, personally.
I'm the same as you, Graham. I was like that. I actually felt at one point as if I was being spoiled, because I remember certain years where there was not a drought, but it just wasn't. I mean, it was before the kind of wider access to indie movies, indie horror movies, that really all you really had to see were the majority of movies that came to the cinema, and not all of them were great. And I thought, like, from especially seeing things like Housebound for the first time, and I thought Housebound was, you know, phenomenal, one of my favourite films. The Babadook is such a good movie. You know, What We Do in the Shadows, even things up to, I got a copy of a movie, and if you've not seen it, it's about to come out. I actually interviewed the director not that long ago, I think it comes out in June, and it is absolutely amazing, called Discopath.
Right. Not
heard of it. When it comes out, I'm going to buy you a copy, right? I'm going to buy you a copy because you need to see this movie. And it's done by a French-Canadian director. And it's kind of like a cross between a slasher and a giallo, set in the 70s, but kind of authentically looks like it's set in the 70s. The guy himself is an art director, so he collects a lot of 70s memorabilia, clothes and all the rest. So it kind of covered that. But it's about a killer whose trigger is disco music. And it's fucking nuts.
I can tell you that.
It's like that. And it's just wonderful. And like, obviously, things through like Stage Fright, the kind of horror musical, which was outlandish, and all the rest. I thought it was like a really good year. What were like some of your highlights for horror movies in 2014? What were some of like the really strong ones?
I think, you know, The Babadook, Housebound, What We Do in the Shadows. The documentary, of course, I've got, you know, some little bit involved, so I'm probably slightly biased, but the documentary about Richard Stanley's Dr. Moreau. I thought that was such a fantastic documentary, just absolutely brilliant, just really, really funny. And of course also Jodorowsky's Dune. So again, another sort of documentary, but really, really funny, just absolutely fascinating, just looking at this kind of mad filmmaking process and the sort of the egos and the sort of the fantasy that goes on in people's minds, that, you know, they think they're gonna get something made, and you know, you just cannot do it because this, you know, it just doesn't physically exist in a real world. This kind of, all the things you need to make it happen. And just all the peripheral characters who, you know, and actually it seems like the less somebody has to do with the film, actually the more entertaining their stories are in some ways. Like, remember in the Moreau documentary, you know, it's just like sort of guys who were, you know, drivers on set and stuff, and to, or, you know, driving the actors around and such like, and it just had some really, really funny stories.
Yeah, I mean, I saw quite early on last year, I think I saw Jodorowsky's Dune, and that movie floored me. I sat there going, I mean, part of me really thinks that we lost probably one of the most fascinating sci-fi movies ever made, but on the other hand, I was like, that movie would have taken years to make. I mean, years. The technology wasn't there, you know, they couldn't catch up. And the fact that he'd cast so many, you know, this part is going to be this person, and you're just like, did they know? Did they know this is the, you know, like, just incredible. And I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of Lynch's Dune anyway. I think it's all right, but it's not. It feels very un-Lynch in a lot of it. You know, a lot of the things that I like about a David Lynch movie aren't necessarily in there, and that's because, you know, it wasn't really his movie. To see what Jodorowsky would have done is just like, it's baffling. And it's, I love the fact that a documentary is so visual in its approach, you know.
Yeah.
It takes you through all the storyboards and, you know, all the artwork that was designed, which are incredible, and to see how that has, you know, a lot of these things have happened, a lot of these, you know,
filter through into, yeah, even Prometheus, yeah, you suddenly saw that, yeah, production drawing, yeah, from Geiger, suddenly film.
It's crazy. I mean,
the idea that, you know, he said from the outset he'd never read the book, and I've never read I thought, well, I identify with that.
As, I tried once before, but Frank Herbert's very dry, very, very dry. And then when I started doing a bit more research afterwards and realised that there are, that whole universe is still going on. There's still people writing about it just now, and it's just like, I don't even think half the time. I struggle enough to get into the... I struggle to finish the first Game of Thrones book, let alone you know, let alone start Dune.
Struggle with you know, life as it is. You know, I don't want to, I need to know about another universe out there.
Oh, it's God, a, I don't think I could... You know, I don't think I could handle
it. A long time.
So I mean, in terms of upcoming projects you can talk about, now I know that a lot of the time, you know, you are kind of sworn to secrecy in terms of, you know, the announcements haven't been officially made or things like that. Is there anything you can tell us? Is there anything in the pipeline that we should be looking out for in the immediate future with your name on it? Festival appearances or anything? No.
I'm going to be at the Birmingham Memorabilia Convention, which is coming up at the end of March, with on the Arrow stand. I'll be there doing some more painting, which people can actually sort of see happening, and flogging some prints as well. Literally all the stuff I'm working on now, it is kind of confidential until it's actually, you know, put into the public domain. Obviously, yeah. Island of Death has just popped up today, and that Cannibal Holocaust soundtrack popped up today, and obviously what we're doing in Shadows popped up today as well, though. So I've got a number of projects I'm going to be working on with a company in Germany, also of Blu-ray DVD releases, and I've just delivered artwork for one of those releases. It's a film that everybody knows, one of those sort of, you know, genre classics, but you know, until it's actually out there, I can't say, but it's fantastic to have worked on it though. And there's a whole series of titles he's kind of booked me in for, which are all sort of, you know, known films and are going to be great fun to work on. There are some other titles coming up for Arrow being talked about at the moment. They're still deciding on what their approach for the project will be, but at this moment in time, it is an illustrated approach, but I can't tell you about
you those. you can't because I know that they did the
I probably can't say, actually. No, I have to be respectful of, you know, because people, you know, when they're commissioning stuff, you know, quite often, you know, people aren't going to know these releases are coming out, and so it's you know, they want to make sure the time is right and they make a bit fanfare about it, and actually also have, you know, ensure it's all ready, because of that whole thing with Society, for instance, and Bridie, a reanimator, you know, announced artwork commissioned and put up on a website, and then suddenly they're unable to release those films. So you know, having reverted back, now they've gone to Arrow, obviously Arrow want to make sure they've got their own individual identity with those films, so they can't really use my artwork, which is a shame. But you know, that's fair enough. I'm just trying to think if anything else is, if there's anything there I can actually talk about. I've just done it's kind of like a little teaser image for a film which has yet to be made. There's a Kickstarter campaign, and they've commissioned four different artists to create a sort of teaser image for the film. That, as far as I know, is due to be announced probably next week, maybe even, though. So there's that.
Do you enjoy the festival circuit? Because I noticed, like, last year you did a couple appearances. Is that a lot of fun?
Yeah, it is, actually. It is. No, I always enjoy it. I love talking to people, because, I mean, for me, it's good to know what people do think of the work that I'm doing, because I need to know that, you know, if what I'm doing is actually hitting the right, you know, buttons and such, and to get that feedback is good. And but it's also for me to actually, it's almost like giving the sort of the people that buy the films my feedback, if you like.
Yeah.
I want to know why they buy the films. You know, what is it about the films that they like? And it's good to know, you know, what it is that attracts people to particular things, and to understand what those hooks are for them, because then that means that I've got a better idea when I'm doing my stuff to know how best to actually make something which is going to make, you know, people happy to see. Mm-hmm. And also I want to have the ammunition if I have to fight my corner over an image with the clients and they're sort of trying to edge it to, in one direction, I'm suggesting actually it needs to go into another direction. I can actually say, well, you know, I'm only saying this because this is it in conversation.
What you've been told, yeah.
What people are interested in and the way it should go. So it's always good to get that. And also I think people, you know, are quite, they're quite fascinated by the whole painted image process. And, you know, people do ask, you know, some quite interesting questions. The other thing is that, you know, there's always going to be somebody coming along who will look at the work and see you painting and, you know that they've got something in mind for the future. And so certainly I've had commissions now based on the fact that somebody has seen me at a convention and, yeah, you know, a little sort of bulb has lit up in their heads and thought, I could probably use this person. So, that kind of happens as well. But I'm just quite fascinated by the whole convention thing anyway. I just love looking at the people and, you know, sort of seeing what, you know, when you get people dressing up as well, with the whole cosplaying thing is fascinating, I find. And just, you know, the range of people as well. I mean, they're all ages. I mean, I get little kids coming up and they're just completely fascinated by the painting. And you know, then the parents say, "Oh yeah, they're not really supposed to look at this kind of stuff," but you know, we let them. And so the thing was a new generation of horror fan there, which is, you know, great. That bodes well for me in front of people.
Yeah.
But yeah, then you get sort of older guys, you know, and characters that will come along and say, "Ah, I remember that." And you know, you have these long conversations about artwork from the 80s and going way back, perhaps even further. The artists, you know, who were doing stuff in the 60s and 70s, and so you kind of get this whole kind of body of you know, humanity, if you like, almost. It's fascinating, I think, though.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of the ones. I might actually try and get out to that one in Birmingham, because we've got friends down there. So I didn't know that one was on. So that's the end of March, did you say?
21st and 22nd, yeah, of March.
Oh, that may actually work, actually. Yeah, I'll need to see if I can make my way down. I all I can say is thank you very much for coming back on the show.
It's always
a pleasure to chat to you. Well, once again, I don't think we necessarily talked loads about particular horror movies, and we will eventually get there. It's just an excuse to come back on somewhere down the line. Thank you very much for coming on, Graham, and I look forward to chatting to you in the future.
Absolutely. Well, I hope it'll be soon as well.
Yes, definitely.
Okay, enjoy your weekend.
Same to yourself, and I'll be right back after this. '72 movies that shocked a nation and made an infamous list, the Video Nasties. Hi, I'm Duncan McLeish, and you can join me and my co-host, Andy Blockley.
Hello.
As we chat about the 72 films, reviewing them all from the Video Nasty list, live on our podcast. Tell them about it, Andy.
Okay, 1982, 20,000 films were seized in London alone because they were too nasty to be watched. Come and find out why.
That's right. The show's called Doing the Nasty Podcast. You can find it exclusively on the Horrorphilia Network of podcasts. Come and check us out.
Almost midnight. Enough time for one more story.
Warning, the Midnight Horror Show is not safe for work and is definitely not for the faint of heart. The following is a small sample of what you'll hear live every Wednesday night at 7 at allradiox.com.
I ain't heard from you shitheads for fucking years.
Now, Webula, we do this thing that's called a live radio show on the internet. And so there's people that interact with us.
Yeah, they're listening and responding to us right now in real time.
Who's talking shit? Somebody's talking shit?
Someone named Fuckface. And so then,
fuck you, Fuckface.
Oh, you think we'll go off on tangents on the Midnight Horror Show?
Have you ever listened to this show before, Mark? He was masturbating into the corpse of a fucking beheaded fish.
Fucking nasty motherfucker.
We're going to end the show on corpse fucking this time, apparently.
Anytime you talk about necrophilia, you're talking... It's going to take a certain kind of person to watch it.
Yes, it's a charmed life.
Fuck you.
You can hear the Midnight Horror Show live at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time every Wednesday night at allradiox.com or download the show on iTunes, Podomatic, or at the allradiox.com page.
You're listening to
the podcast Under the Stairs.
And welcome back. So you've been listening to the podcast Under the Stairs bonus episode number 12, which featured as its main event the interview conducted with myself and horror artist Graham Humphrey. I hope you enjoyed that interview. I think that man's pretty fucking cool, if I'm being honest. And I really look forward to some of the secret upcoming projects that he was talking about there. So I keep diligent when it comes to Graham, and the best way to do that is to follow him on Facebook. If you want to follow him on Facebook, you can check out the show notes, and you'll find his Facebook page there. He also has a book just now which is limited to 500 copies, which can be pre-ordered, which features an absolute ton of his artwork that he's created in his career. The book is called Drawing Blood, and it has about 120 images that he has painted for various different campaigns, old and new, spawning right back to the 1980s and beyond. The book can be pre-ordered from proudonline.co.uk/p/1035/Graham-Humphreys-horror-art. I'll also post that in the show notes as well, so you can go over, check it out. Like I say, this is extremely limited. There's only 500 copies being made, and it is scheduled to be ready for about Halloween 2015. So if you are looking for something truly special which showcases the man's artwork, the diverse amount of artwork that he's done in the world of horror and beyond, then you should get over there and pre-order yourself a copy. It looks like it's going to be pretty fucking cool. The posters inside it feature things like Life is Sweet, Eric the Viking, From Dusk Till Dawn, House of a Thousand Corpses, and Party Monster, to name but a few. So yeah, go over there, get yourself that book pre-ordered, and sit back and enjoy his artwork, man. The man is incredibly talented, and I can't wait to see where he goes next in 2015 with the amount of stuff that Arrow's putting out, and other companies as well that are coming up. 88 Films are a great example. We'll just need to wait and see where he goes from there. So like I said at the start of the show, plenty still to come up. The next episode that will drop will be the very special Easter Monday version of the podcast Under the Stairs, which will feature a commentary on Rawhead Rex by myself, The Baz, and Dave from Rock and Reel Reviews. The show after that, the following Monday, will be the podcast Under the Stairs special episode number 50, which is the Fulci Gates of Hell trilogy episode, which I can't wait to fucking do. You can check out me on other shows as well. Remember to check out the Midnight Horror Show. You can listen to us live every single Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, on tmhsradio.com. The show lasts about 2 hours, but you can also check that the show out in podcast form on Podomatic. You type in the Midnight Horror Show there and check us out. And also remember, Doing the Nasty over exclusively on Horrorphilia Podcasting Network. Myself and Andy Blockley running through the films that made the Video Nasty list. So that show is proving to be a lot of fun, albeit the ratio of good films to bad films are slightly more heavier on the bad movies, if you know what I mean. So yeah, you can check them out as well. Remember, you can also leave some feedback for the show on iTunes. If it was a 5-star review, let's say, that bumps me up the ratings and lets other people come across the show. You can also send us some feedback directly on the Facebook page. If you like any of what I'm doing, if you've got suggestions of films you would like me to cover in future shows, then by all means drop them in there. I'm always looking for people to steer me in the direction of films I've seen that I've completely forgotten about, or films I've never heard of before, so that's worth checking out. Recently, our good buddy Zach, over on the Facebook page, had posted that he finally got a chance to see The Canal, and he really enjoyed it, and hopefully he checked out that film based on my recommendation, because it was my film of the year last year. year in the horror category. So yeah, you can do that. Remember, you can also take part in Baz's Basement, which will be coming back on an upcoming show, not the commentary, but on episode number 50. To leave a question or ask for some advice, you can send an email to podcastunderthestairs@gmail.com with the header Baz's Basement. And the Baz will also be returning very soon to conclude his Friday the 13th retrospective look in an upcoming Baz V Horror episode at number 15, where we tackle part 9, part 10, and the remake. So there's light at the end of that motherfucking tunnel. I just want to say thanks again to everyone that has checked out this show. It really blows me away each time I put an episode up, just how quickly you guys download it, how quickly you give me the feedback on the page. I've said it before, I'll say it again, best Facebook group page on the fucking internet. You guys are just absolutely brilliant. So yeah, thank you very much for that. You humble me. So I think that's everything. Ending this show on a completely sappy bastard note. But thank you very much for checking out the show again. I will be back in a week's time to talk about some Rawhead Rex. Oh yeah, I can't wait. We'll be posting trailers, artwork, and all sorts of shit about that movie till that fucking show drops. I cannot wait. So Rawhead Rex commentary coming up, but until I speak to you then, which will be sooner than you think, please take care of yourselves out there. This is Duncan McLeish, coming live from the void, signing off.
Vision.